It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
Live from Everywhere USA, it's Fox Across America with Jimmy Failla.
Jimmy on a plane, Todd is in your brain. This is Todd Pyro from Fox and Friends First, co-host with the amazing Carly Shimkus, filling in for my friend Jimmy Failla as he heads across our great land to do, as they refer to in Seinfeld, one of his little comedy gigs. But unfortunately for the haters, Jimmy's comedy gigs aren't tiny anymore. They're big. He's selling out crowds. He's turning out the people. He's putting butts in the seats. And so for a lot of the Fridays, he needs fill-ins. And I am fortunate and blessed to be with you all for the next 3 hours. And if you're somebody out there who's a big fan of Todd Pyro, kind of don't know why, Mom, today is your day. Because we were up very, very early, 4 a.m. on the East Coast on Fox and Friends First, earlier than our normal 5 a.m. start time. And the reason was the breaking news overnight, Israel striking back. As you probably know by now, Israel carrying out a strike in Iran early Friday in retaliation for last weekend's drone and missile attack. Now, a well-placed military source has told Fox News that the Israeli strike in Iran was limited. Sources familiar said the U.S. was not involved, confirmed by Secretary of State Antony Blinken later on in a press conference, and that there was pre-notification to the United States from the Israelis. So what about the explosions? Do we know? Again, a lot of this information is coming from Iran, Iran state media, so you always need to take it with a grain of salt. May be truthful, may not be truthful, but what we are being told right now is that these explosions occurred in and around an area where some of Iran's nuclear facilities are located. It does not appear that these nuclear facilities were hit, and that's important. We'll get to that clarification, that distinction, in a moment. But the key takeaway going forward is this. An Iranian official is telling Reuters there are no plans to respond against Israel for the incident. So what did we just witness over the course of the last week? We witnessed Iran telegraphing to the world with warning after warning after warning that they were going to strike Israel, and then they did, except for the fact that of the 300 missiles that were sent toward Israel, I think 4 or 5 got through, and they didn't hit anything significant. Obviously, partly because of the Israeli defense system, but also partly because you gave warning. This definitely wasn't a sneak attack. And then in response, we have a situation where Israel, quite frankly, if they wanted to, could have struck Iran and struck them hard. But they didn't. They did this kind of very limited and very targeted strike to not cause any issues. All the commentators, the experts in foreign policy that we had on this morning on my show, Fox and Friends First, came to the same conclusion. And they use this phrase. This was an exit ramp, an off ramp. This was an opportunity for both sides to save face in an effort to not allow this to develop into a larger kinetic war. But that said, Jonathan T. Gilliam, earlier on my show, said Iran ultimately does want war. And so when you put these two together, it begs the question, what was today? What was last week? What have we seen in this region over the course of the last 7 days? And what happens next? If there is going to be a larger regional conflict, Iran better wake up to the fact that based upon what we saw last night, it may not be in the best position to defend itself, and that Israel may be toying with Iran based upon the way we got the Israelis got close to a nuclear facility but didn't go right onto it, didn't blow it up, but showed that they could. And we had Jim Hansen on 4 a.m. right off the bat, and he really put this into perspective. Play clip 3.
They basically pointed out that they can hit any place or anything or anyone that they want to in Iran. which is particularly embarrassing after Iran launches a massive barrage. Israel did not have to do more. They won the first round by defeating Iran's attack. And now they're showing they can spike the football in the end zone and tell Iran, we're not going to do that.
So, yes, while Iran did say that they were not going to respond against Israel for this incident, there is also the possibility that the quote-unquote retaliation for what we saw last night could come in a different form. It could come in something that doesn't necessarily hit Israel in Israel's homeland, but could be something that hits groups of Jews in Europe, groups of Jews in another country. And we had foreign policy experts explain that. The fact of the matter is, what does this all come back to? Why do you, listening right now, care about this, save for your desire to be an informed world citizen and your desire to understand what is going on overseas? The fact of the matter is, I think many people would agree, we would not be in this situation if the Biden administration had, one, not shown overall weakness on the world stage, two, not shown overall weakness when it comes to this specific region of the world, the Middle East. I'm looking at the Afghanistan withdrawal in particular. But most importantly, had not emboldened this Iranian regime. I don't even want to say the Iranian people, because the Iranian people aren't part of this. I'm talking about the Iranian regime that rules with an iron fist over the Iranian people, had not emboldened them with both money and excuses, I'm going to call it, on the world stage. Those excuses involved the JCPOA, the Iran nuclear deal, this notion that Donald Trump was wrong to shut down the Iran nuclear deal, and the Obama-Biden regimes were right to, one, start it when it comes to Obama and resuscitate it when it comes to Biden. I ask you, what do you think? Do you think that Joe Biden's right, Obama's right, when he said we're safer, the world is safer, if we can have Iran in an Iran nuclear deal? Does this look safe to you? Has Iran demonstrated during the course of being in these deals and negotiating these deals that they are going to follow any single one, two, three, any protocols when it comes to what they signed on to? No. The Iranian regime demonstrates no trustworthiness. We shouldn't trust these people as far as we can throw them. And yet Joe Biden and Barack Obama before him have continued with this notion, and all their foreign policy, quote unquote, experts have continued with this notion that if we give them a chance, it's better for us because we get to monitor what they're doing when it comes to nukes. And we get to have some control over it. I hate to break it to you, Joe. I hate to break it to you, Barack. We have no control over what they're doing. They are able to enrich uranium at a rate that this would not be in any deal, okay? So what is going on right now is bad. It was precipitated by horrible policy from the Barack Obama and Joe Biden administrations. It stopped for a time during Donald Trump, and yet here we are. Unsafe from a nuclear war perspective. Israel, unsafe, although they demonstrated they could knock down a lot. And we have a region that could be potentially in more turmoil and that doesn't need to necessarily be in turmoil. I hope the people we spoke with today are right, that this is the end of it. But deep down inside, my gut tells me it's probably not the end of it. This is a region that has been in conflict not for a week, not for a month, not for a year. We're talking for thousands of years. It's unlikely that it's just going to end with one side saying, hey, we got you. The other side and the tit for tat saying, we got you back. And then us all walking away. This is because Joe Biden on the world stage emboldened all of our adversaries thanks to his weakness and then gave them money to basically do what they want. And I don't want to hear this, oh, the money is for humanitarian reasons. Money is fungible. If I give you something and say use it for this, you don't have to necessarily use it for that. You can say you are, but it's just going to go into the bank account and you're going to be able to use the money, the other money, for the bad thing. And that's exactly what Iran has done. So what happens now? I'm just going to issue a big fat I don't know. And I don't think the foreign policy experts know either. I sure hope they're right. I sure hope this is the end. I sure hope this has no ramifications here at home. But I'm not so sure. We have a jam-packed Fox Across America for you here on your Friday. Jimmy Failla in Fargo, Todd Pyro on your radio. More Fox Across America after this.
The show that connects you to people in high places.
It's like the most important man in the world standing here, and you got a conversation going with each other.
Fox Across America with Jimmy Failla. The Fox News Rundown, a contrast of perspectives you won't hear anywhere else. Your daily dose of news twice a day, featuring insight from top newsmakers, reporters, and Fox News contributors. Listen and subscribe now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com.
You are listening to Fox Across America. I am your fill-in host, Todd Pyro, from Fox and Friends First. In for Jimmy Failla. And for those of you who used to watch live with Regis and Kathy Lee, the producer's name was Gelman. And Regis always used to talk to his producer in the middle of the show. Gelman. And that's the worst impression I've ever done on air. So I have my own Gelman right now. And I'm very excited because we've been trying to get together on a radio or TV platform for some time now. And if he would indulge me, he's a criminal defense attorney, and his name is David Gelman. Gelman, are you on the air?
I'm here, Todd. I'm here.
All right, we're gonna stop with the Gelman impression because it's horrible, and I'm sure all of America just turned off their radio. But for those who have have decided to stay, let's talk Trump. Let's talk the Trump trial, but I want to focus two lawyers, which I am, arguably, talking about next steps. Because I feel like anywhere you go, you have everybody and their mother dissecting the jury and going through every permutation of each strike of each juror and all the information about the jurors that we can and can't talk about on air. And is Trump going to go to jail? Is this going to? I want to take a step way forward to the appeals process. Because that's where my mind goes as a lawyer right now, and I hope yours goes there too. So put your appellate lawyer hat on, and we're going to have one overriding assumption for this, which is that in a very biased New York City jury pool with a very biased New York City judge, that Donald Trump is going to get convicted for basically a mislabeling, which I guarantee I mislabeled something today. I certainly hope I don't get convicted criminally for it. But okay, so up till this point, what do you look at as a potential grounds for appeal? Just take me up to this point, whether it involves this jury process, the motions up till this point, the gag order. Just have at it. Run me through where Donald Trump can appeal if he's ultimately convicted.
Well, you know, Todd, number one, I hope you didn't mislabel any of Jimmy's blazers if you're on the set, okay? So
that's criminal. But, yeah, that could get you put in the poker.
That is criminal, and you will go to jail. But, you know, he has multiple appeal issues if and when it gets to that. Now, all right, that's a great assumption that it's going to happen. But number one, and I think this is the biggest one, is the judge never recused himself. You know, you see the judge, how many conflicts he has. Number one, look, his daughter works for a company or owns a company that is profits from Democratic fundraising. Well, Donald Trump is not a Democrat, last time I checked. In fact, the Democrats go after him. So she is making money, probably hand over fist right now, because of this trial. So in the event that the judge rules any way against Donald Trump, that is a conflict, whether it's right or wrong. So he should have conflicted himself out of this way, way earlier than now, and obviously he's not doing so. Furthermore, New York actually has case law which states that if you have a family member that is six times removed, Todd, and there is even a potential of some type of a conflict or bias, the judge has to recuse himself. Again, hasn't happened. So you got that. That's a big one. The second one, and this has been on the news, obviously, for the last week or so, is the gag order. The gag order is constitutionally wrong. I mean, Todd, you're an attorney. I'm an attorney. Have you ever seen or heard of a judge telling a defendant in a criminal case you are not allowed to actually talk about the case? It boggles my mind that, you know, our founding fathers are rolling in their graves about this. You may not like what Donald Trump is saying about the case. You may not agree with it, but it's his First Amendment right to talk about it. And he should be talking about it. I mean, it's a terrible case. We all know this. This is not even a misstep or a mislabeling. This is all correct. Remember, a low-level employee of the Trump Organization wrote in the ledger of a checkbook, legal services. That's exactly what Michael Cohen prepared and did for Donald Trump. He did legal services. He had a $35,000 a month retainer. This is for 6 months they paid him. So there's nothing wrong. There was no corruption. I mean, and frankly, the DA is bringing this as a pretty much a federal offense. Well, there's no jurisdiction for a federal offense. So that's the third appeal that you have right now. So there's three appealable issues just off the top. And I frankly don't think we have enough time on the radio today to go through the remaining of them.
Well, I mean, let's be real. We haven't gotten to the merits. We're not going to have time to get to the merits, but they haven't gotten to the merits in the courtroom yet. That's going to be over the course of the next potentially 6 to 8 weeks. And if the fine folks at Fox Across America have me back, I'll have you back, and we'll talk about the appealable grounds at that point. But in the 1.5 to 2 minutes that we have remaining at this point, you can appeal it, but is the court system above this trial court level, how can I put this, nonpartisan enough, fair enough to actually, you know, treat it as if a normal appellate, treat it as a normal appeals court in a, let's call it a normal state would? Are you confident that Donald Trump will see justice at the appellate level? About a minute to you, David.
So, yeah, I think that he will have more. Obviously, anybody's going to have more success than being in the Manhattan courtroom. That's a given. The appeals court, they're not elected like they are in the state court. So I do have more confidence in that appellate division. However, in the event that he's not successful there, he can go then to a potentially a federal court or to the higher state court where, again, they're not going to be nearly as biased, and they're going to look at the actual facts and the merits of the case and the legal arguments and what really went wrong from the very beginning.
And again, the question then becomes, and I have only about 15 seconds for this, will Donald Trump physically be behind bars as he awaits his appeal? Do you ever see that scenario happening? 15 seconds to you.
No, not in this lifetime. You know, I'm sure the people in New York and in that courtroom probably want to see it, but there's no way in blue hell that's going to ever happen. This is a probation case at worst.
We will see. David Gelman, it's been a pleasure joining you, having you join me. Gelman, I just love saying it. More Fox Across America after this. You're listening to Fox Across America. I am your fill-in host, Todd Pyro, Fox and Friends. First in for Jimmy Fallon. Hope our friend Jimbo is flying safely to his next comedy destination, where they are certainly preparing for a torrent of laughs. No laughing on this next subject, because it's talking financing of our foreign policy. And for that, we bring in the great congressman from the great state of Pennsylvania, Dan Muser. Dan, great to have you on radio. I've spoken with you on TV before. It's awesome to chat with you on these airwaves now. So what is the current state of play, 12:35 p.m. East Coast time, when it comes to foreign aid currently in Congress?
Hi, Todd. Hey, great to be with you. You know, sometimes they tell me I got a face for radio, so this might... Hey, so yeah, you're right. It is no laughing matter. This is some of the most frustrating bills and situations I've faced in my nearly 6 years into my third term here in the U.S. House. You know, there's a number of problems with these bills. And frankly, there were some amendments issued which would have made the bills a heck of a lot more palatable for me and, frankly, others. And I would want to be supportive of the Ukraine effort. I do think Vladimir Putin is a war criminal and was completely unlawful and wrong, and horrific in today's day and age and what's occurred in the Ukraine. Nevertheless, our bill has a number of problems with them, in my view. And we'll see if any of those get corrected. I mean, first off, we stated we were going to have border security. So along with securing the Ukraine border, we were going to have our border secured. And clearly that didn't happen. Second, that's not happening. Second, the EU has not lived up to the obligations I've been advocating for a while. They're still way behind the U.S., the American taxpayers' financial support of the Ukraine effort. We're at $113 billion, and they're at like half that on an equal GDP basis. And then, you know, rolling into the bill itself, I mean, you know, in the end, I mean, it reads $60 billion, but with replenishment and everything else, it's really $23 billion. But that's a lot of money. There are added sanctions, and we have this repo act within a portion of the bill. So that improves it from the Senate bill. But my largest hang-up is certainly the things I just mentioned, but there's $10 billion in economic assistance to the Ukraine government, and that's basically cash. And that was what I said would be a deal breaker. I mean, I want military hardware. I want weapons that are needed. I want the appropriate defense equipment that they need with USA procurement oversight. And I'm not seeing it in this bill, so I doubt I can support it.
You're all going to have a pretty long weekend if reports are correct. What happens at the end of that weekend when I'm doing my next thing on TV Monday morning, 5 a.m., Fox and Friends first? That was a cheap plug. But what am I reporting on? What happened over the weekend? Do we have a bill? Do we have bills or what?
Well, I probably, honestly, I'm not sure if everyone's looking at this in the manner that I am, meaning I do think related to the Ukraine. You know, Biden's certainly for it. And look, he said from the very beginning, all in, whatever that's supposed to mean, you know, just writing a blank check on behalf of the American taxpayer. And that's a really bad strategy on any issue, and as it is here. So I think you're going to probably get most Democrats, if not all, and you'll get you'll get enough Republicans, I think, to put it over the top. And I'm not all that happy about that, because it's important. It matters. We want to support Ukraine, but frankly, not in this manner. And even the Israel bill, Todd, the Israel bill has $8.5 billion to Israel for things like missile defense, for the Iron Dome, for David Sling, for the things that I'm favorable to, without a doubt, that our allies Israel need, and I want to support Israel, but I'm very troubled by this $9.1 billion of humanitarian aid that's going to the USAID for international disaster assistance that frankly can go anywhere, and I fear this might be directed by the Biden White House to Gaza, and frankly, you know, potentially into the hands of Hamas. So I got real struggles with this one, too.
You used the word frustrated early on in this interview, early on in your answer. And that reminded me of a conversation I had a couple months ago with Stuart Varney on air on his show. I believe you've been on that show time or two as well. And we were talking about government funding, a little bit different, same church, different pew than what we're talking about now. And our overall assessment was, the American people, We think that their eyes just glaze over, whether you're a Republican or a Democrat, when we talk about these things. And at the end of the day, they are, to use your word, frustrated. Because whenever we talk about what is happening in D.C., we need one of those Chad Pergram emails. Chad, our great colleague, who explains the state of play, what's happening.
Yep.
But we need that to, one, understand the logistics, the policies, the procedures as they happen in Washington, D.C., in Congress. But bigger issue, it just seems that nothing gets done smoothly. Is that just democracy in action and we should be championing it? Or is this dysfunction? Because, boy, Congressman, it sure seems like the latter.
Yeah, I hear you. I actually drove up to my district last night and had an event and came back late last night. And I had about 80 people there, and they were very frustrated. A lot of questions. And as you said, their eyes not really glazing over. Their eyes are they're quite informed. And this should be simpler. It shouldn't be this complicated. We should have accountability. We should not be handing cash out without U.S. oversight on behalf of the American taxpayer to make sure all those dollars. I mean, who would disagree with that? I mean, that's just really common sense. Our EU partners should be at parity on a GDP basis. They've got more at stake, frankly, than us. But still, we want to be on equal footing with them. And the American people are asking those questions. Why don't we have this level of common sense? And why can't we just come together as Republicans, but more importantly, as Americans, to work on these issues? But the frustration also lies in our border, right? I mean, here, we the most important issue to the American people at this point, Republicans and Democrats in cities and in urban and rural areas, and it's not part of this. Where we got bills for the Ukraine, we got bills for Israel, we got bills for the Southeast Pacific, for Taiwan, but we don't have a bill to protect our border. So we got to have leadership. We've got to work on the things that matter. I do believe in America first, but not America alone. And frankly, I'll tell you what, we need a leader, and I'm not sure we're going to be able to correct these things until we reelect Donald Trump. And I mean that. President Trump had the ability to bring certainly our party together, and I think we had a lot of peaceful negotiations. They weren't easy, right? Some of the tariff and trade agreements and everything else, but those tariffs weren't being imposed by the president to protect our products. They were to make our products more competitive overseas, and I know that as a fact. So that's kind of what's going on here, and we've got to deliver so the American people believe that we can move things in the right direction.
We'll get to the border in a second, specifically with regard to the vote in your state of Pennsylvania. But you mentioned the word leadership. You also mentioned Republican caucus. Got to ask you about the third member of the Republican caucus just moments ago. It's unclear to me whether they're calling for Speaker Johnson's ouster or not. It seems in one breath they are, and then when you ask these individuals led by Marjorie Taylor Greene, they're like, no, we don't want. I'm confused. I don't know which way the wind is blowing, but I do know there are three people that appear to be like they would be okay if Speaker Johnson was no longer the speaker. Where do you fall on this? And secondarily, what does this mean for the strength of the Republicans in Congress to get anything done? Because, again, going back to that word frustration, if I'm a Republican, I'm looking at what's happening in Congress and thinking, I have a candidate who's running for president who's, you know, despite the fact that he's in court every day, is leading in the polls, yet somehow the Republicans in Congress are appearing to try and snatch defeat from the jaws of victory.
Yeah. Well, on that note, we have a number of pickup opportunities in Pennsylvania and throughout the country, we meaning the Republican conference, the Republican caucus. And I do think we're going to retain the House. And I do think it's important that we have a more of a majority to get 218, 219 people to agree on anything is not easy. So there is that. But you also, the American people have to keep in mind that if we didn't have the majority, that tax bill that we passed out of the House would not have gotten passed. There is no question a Democrat-led, Nancy Pelosi-led or Hakeem Jeffries-led House with a Schumer Senate, with Biden in the White House, would have spent another $1 trillion plus. We see that, and we know that's a fact because we see what Biden's budget looks like for next year, should he get reelected. So we are keeping a lot of bad things from happening. There would have been more regulations on energy, et cetera. But that being said, we on the vacate the chair issue, look, I'm totally against the idea of vacating the chair. Mike Johnson is a person of high character. He's very honest. He listens to everybody. I was with him two nights ago for well over an hour, me and just a couple of other members. He's a smart guy. He's a constitutionalist. Do I think there can be some improvements there in his speakership and his leadership? Yes, I do, frankly. But if you don't have a real ethical issue and really a loss of support of the majority or close to the majority, if not the majority, of the conference, I think it's very wrong for any discussion on vacating the chair, particularly when you don't have an idea of who would resume that position, who would take on the next speakership. So that would be a setback, and frankly, just as it was with the removal of McCarthy. So I'm hoping that doesn't we don't erode into that direction.
Right. And who would want that job at this point? I'm not asking you for a specific name, but my gosh. Easily the most thankless job in Washington. Promised we'd get to the border. Do want to get to the border this week. No trial in the Senate after the House did send over articles of impeachment with regard to Mayorkas. How do Republicans, especially in your swing state of Pennsylvania, when it comes to the presidency, Joe Biden versus Donald J. Trump at this point, how do you make the case that no, this wasn't a useless exercise as the Democrats want to portray it? This was a necessary activity, a necessary exercise to hold Mayorkas and the Biden administration to account for endangering the national security of our country. How do you make that case to either the undecided Pennsylvania voter or the Pennsylvania voter who voted for Biden in the Pennsylvania suburbs because they just didn't like Trump? How do you make that case?
Well, the border crisis is the fault of the Biden administration. They reversed all of the Trump policies and virtually immediately, day one in office, and the level of illegals crossings quadrupled, quintupled. I mean, it's so much higher. The drugs coming through are out of control. The cartels are running things, making all kinds of money on human trafficking, on drugs, poisoning our people, turning much of Mexico into a gangland. And Mayorkas is in charge of his sworn oath is to protect the border and to have an orderly border. He has been incredibly derelict in that duty. The articles we brought forth were one was a breach of public trust and the other was a willful and systematic refusal to comply with the law. There's no gray area there. He did not enforce the Secure the Fence Act. He did not enforce the Immigration Nationality Act. Those are laws passed by Congress, and he's in violation of Article 2 of the U.S. Constitution. I mean, the guy, and then on top of it, he'll come into your office and sit down with you and tell you that the border is secure. I mean, you know, what planet did he descend from? So what we did was very – we painted into a corner. How much talk are we going to have with them? How many – we passed H.R. 2. We passed legislation. We voice it regularly. We all go down to the border. We hold meetings at the border. So the guy who refuses to enforce the law and states that, in fact, he is doing it when he's not, and America knows it, if he won't resign, we impeached him. So and the Senate, by the way, wouldn't impeach – Jack the Ripper. If Jack the Ripper were a Democrat, they wouldn't impeach. So I mean, look what Menendez. I mean, they won't push Menendez out, and the guy is clearly taking bribes and providing, providing things for those bribes to Egypt and God knows what other countries. And yet There he continues to sit in the United States Senate, thanks to Chuck Schumer. That's why we need to win that gavel, too. But, you know, so that's kind of the situation there. That's why it's justified. We had to impeach Mayorkas. And unfortunately, somebody else like Mayorkas would likely be his replacement. So once again, the only answer is electing President Trump. So we have a White House that does enforce our border laws.
Your state will be determinative of that. It does appear. Latest polls, Fox News polling, tied in the Keystone State. Congressman Dan Muser, appreciate your time. Enjoy your weekend. You know, the part of it that is a weekend when you're not hanging out in the place where you are Monday through Friday. Congressman, appreciate your time. More Fox Across America after this.
You're listening to Fox Across America with Jimmy Failla.
That's my name. Don't wear it out.
Hey, at this point, I'd settle for the Giants taking Phil Collins in the draft next week. Let's talk about the NFL draft, less than a week away. And as three Giants fans are about to tell you, we're nervous because we have no flipping idea what this team is going to do. I've gone back and forth. Go for the quarterback. That would be great. Don't go for the quarterback. Build around Daniel Jones. Trade the pick. What do you got?
I got Daniel Jones. Keep him. Okay. You got one more year. Go with a wide receiver. Give him a big target. And if he doesn't get it done, he doesn't get it done. And, you know, maybe draft a running back, but in like the fourth or fifth round, not with the sixth pick.
Miguelito, what do you got?
Yeah, I got to agree with Josh there. I think only because it looks like all these mock drafts I'm seeing, these quarterbacks are going to go like the top four guys are going to go all in the top five. And I think Arizona's going to take Marvin Harrison. I think the Giants end up with Malik Nabers.
Wow. There you go. We're just going to spend the rest of the show breaking down every other team's draft needs. No, we're not, because this isn't a sports show. It's Fox Across America with your fill-in host, Todd Pyro, in for Jimmy Failla. More after this.
Live from Everywhere USA, it's Fox Across America with Jimmy Failla.
Jimmy is on a plane. Actually, I should stop saying that. Jimmy's probably landed right now and preparing for his gig there in the great city of Fargo. So I am Todd Pyro, in for my friend. I, of course, from the show that's on very early, Fox and Friends First, 5 a.m. on the East Coast today because of the events happening in Israel, in Iran. We were on at 4 a.m. And so I am right now not going to lie to the American people listening. I'm very tired. I've looked at the clock. I know we're 1 hour down and we have 2 hours to go. Energy may be waning. The tea I had to save my voice does have caffeine in it, but maybe that caffeine's waning. So instead of artificial stimulants, I don't know. Maybe we should get a little natural. Maybe some vitamin D. Maybe get a little sunshine in our lives. Yep, I'm a dad, and that was a dad joke. Let's welcome in Caroline Sunshine, National Press Secretary for Vivek Ramaswamy, former actress. She'll deliver a little sunshine. She won't steal our sunshine. She's walking on sunshine. Caroline, I'll be quiet now. How are you?
How are you? What an intro. Yeah. I would never believe that you've been up since 4 a.m. That was one heck of an intro. Wow. Thank you. I will do my best to bring the vitamin D that is needed. But
I love it.
Boy, was that was stellar. Thank you.
Stellar. That's a loose use of the word stellar. I wouldn't go that far. but great to have you, as always. I love
thank
speaking
you.
With you. And, you know, I just turned 46 a couple weeks ago. I definitely identify with the old folks now. And so I love going to somebody like you to get the youngin' perspective. And when you think youngins, in many instances, you think colleges and universities. And I'd really like to draw our attention to what's happening. Columbia University, an Ivy League school, supposed to be the best and the brightest among us. And yet we have protesters who have no idea of the law. I would also argue they have no idea of what they're fighting for. And they also say, quite frankly, really stupid things to people who have a camera in their face, like our own Alexis McAdams. Not calling her stupid, but just listen to the interview that she did and the comments that she received from one student in particular. Play clip 12.
We make revolution by building beautiful things, and Columbia squashes that by destroying those beautiful things.
How so?
Well, we came together peacefully to assemble with love and with prayer and with respect for all human beings, for the freedom of Palestine. And Columbia University has responded with violence through the use of the NYPD to suppress all efforts at free speech and to suppress peaceful revolution through the building of beautiful things.
Caroline, I'm the lawyer here, so I'm going to take the free speech element of this. You take all the rest. When it comes to what he calls suppressing free speech, the government is allowed to impose time, manner, and place restrictions on your speech. In other words, yes, you are allowed to make your point. You are allowed to say what you want. But if there's a reason, i.e. safety or some other reason, that it needs to be done in a particular time, manner, or place, the government may impose restrictions. So our friend here who gave the soundbite to Alexis McAdams has no idea what he's talking about on the law. What about the rest of the junk that he just spewed forth? Caroline, your thoughts?
Well, Todd, I am certainly a free speech absolutist. You will find, you know, often, hopefully no stronger defender of the First Amendment than myself. But I will say, if you're going to have the right to free speech, for goodness sake, please have something more intelligent to say when you exercise it than what that young man had to say. And I see this with so many of our young people. I think it is natural when one is young to want to express oneself, to want to feel as if you are a rebel with a cause, to feel as though you are standing up to the man and taking on a system, whatever that may be. I think that is so natural in young people, but I see it being so misguided in our current generation. And that young man and his comments is certainly emblematic of that. So while I have to grant him his right to free speech, please, I don't know what they're teaching at Columbia nowadays, but not the best representative of what is supposedly our best and brightest. What's interesting to me, too, is, you know, taking the free speech element of things out of it and really what these college students are protesting for, what they think they're protesting for, I'm not sure they can fully articulate it, actually, is the thing, right? I think they can, but they can't. And what's interesting to me is a lot of these protests have turned into, you see the Death to America chants, you know, coming out of this style. And it's interesting because these Columbia students are, these are the most, you know, educated, privileged among us. And yet death to America is what they think is acceptable, you know, to chant. It's just, there's this fascinating dichotomy kind of going on in American politics among our young people, where the people who really have the reason to love it the most seem to hate it the most. And I don't think that's by accident. I think it's by design. And I actually don't think it's shocking at all that you see, when you look at what is tolerated at places like Ivy League universities nowadays, it's not surprising that you then see college students who I really think are just lost adopting, you know, rhetoric like this and thinking that this is what it means to stand up to a system. This is what it means to be a rebel. But I would say you want to be a rebel today. Try coming out and saying you're conservative. Try coming out and saying you want to get married young and have children. Try standing for the flag. Try saying the Pledge of Allegiance. That's what it really means to be a rebel. I think conservative is the new counterculture. And what this guy, when I just hear them open their mouths, it's not so much that I have, you know, anger or disrespect for him. I certainly do. But more you just go, wow, these kids are so lost. And there's nothing that Columbia University is doing to help them get found, you know.
I hear your answer, and I agree wholeheartedly with everything you said with regard to who is to blame. And you definitely, in your answer, took an approach of the system is to blame, mm-hmm. specifically as you boil it down, the colleges and universities, the high schools, the education system, and the overall culture. And I 100% agree with that. But I find myself asking the question, how did these people grow up? You know, I'm a dad now, and I see how my girls are growing up. And admittedly, they are very young. You know, we have not faced major discussions about foreign policy. But I also saw how I grew up. And, you know, these thoughts were never even any glimmer in my mind. And so My question for you is, what's going on in the homes? What are the parents doing or not doing to foster kids that behave like this? Because I truly, you know, look, I went to school with the diverse people. I went to an Ivy League school at Dartmouth. Admittedly, they're handling the Israeli situation very, very well. I got to give my alma mater credit there. But you just had your diverse points of view and you went on with your business and you learned from the diverse points of view. These people, I don't know what they're doing. Or I guess the question, Caroline, I can't ask this any other way. How are these people raised?
Short answer, not very well. But truly, I really believe we live in a culture of lies, a culture that is that sells values to our young people that are antithetical to their happiness, their fulfillment, and antithetical to what we stand for as Americans. You know, this country's motto is still, it's at least still for now, you know, out of many, one. That's not the rhetoric that's been sold to this generation for the last decade or so. I really believe most culturally significant issues in American politics can be traced back to the tree of identity politics. And this is a generation that has been raised with the mentality that it's all about what makes you unique, what makes you special, what makes you different. And while that may seem like a benign message to sell, it sort of becomes the root of, well, let's celebrate our differences rather than our unity, if you will, what makes us. It's great to have differences, but we want to have the things that tie us together as a people, as a nation, as a country. We want to have things that make us feel bound to our country, that make us feel loyal to our country. That is certainly not what's been sold to this current generation of young Americans. It's been identity politics is what's been celebrated. And now it's been a culture that we've really lost the value of, we've perverted what freedom of speech means. Because what's interesting is I don't agree with anything this young man has to say, but I will defend his right to say it. I doubt he would grant me the same courtesy or think that I have the same right, right? And it's not just this young man is existing in a microcosm, again, of a culture that is tolerating this. Because you look at, I think just past week, you had, you know, the CEO of NPR coming out saying she thinks truth is subjective. It's not really all that important, not all that relevant to what they do. One of their journalists at NPR was brave enough to come out and say, yeah, by the way, you know, I don't think what we've been doing here is true. I think we've been pushing false narratives that are divisive and poisonous to American discourse. And NPR responded by firing that individual, by having no tolerance for dissent. So that's the irony here, is that every one of those Columbia students is going to tell you that they're out there exercising their right to freedom of speech, but not really. It's really freedom of speech for thee, you know, and or for me, not for thee, you know, right. And therein lies the problem.
Well, just a quick update. According to the New York Post, these encampments at Columbia have resurfaced starting this morning. So they are back. Maybe we'll get some amazing sound bites from our friend, your friend, Iam, as his name says here. We like him so much, Caroline, we want to hear more from him. Play clip 13 now.
So what happened when you were in custody? You got taken from campus. They handcuffed you. And what happened?
Well, we sang spirituals all the way down to the jailhouse. We sang hymns of revolution. We sang folk songs. We sang about all you fascists being bound to lose, all the military-industrial complex, corporate-endorsed Zionist-backed institutions.
Okay, Caroline, forgetting the junk that he said at the end, he says we sing hymns of revolution. There is an attempted equivalence there with the civil rights movement. And my colleague, Lawrence Schoen, you see him on Fox and Friends First and Fox and Friends, co-host of Fox and Friends, who is black, he was livid at that, comparing this, what you saw on Columbia and what you've seen since October 7th throughout our country with the civil rights movement. I heard that and I said, amen, Lawrence, there is no equivalence there. The plight and struggle of the black American versus celebrating, quite frankly, murderers who paraglided into a concert and killed people is one of the most offensive things I've ever heard. About 2 minutes to you, Caroline. Your thoughts on that?
Well, Well, again, this is, you know, if nothing else, sunlight is the best disinfectant. And so I hope people have their eyes wide open to the fact that this is what, take a good look, America. This is what your Ivy League universities are producing. And, you know, you mentioned the encampments are back. I'm very worried about these protesters, Todd. They're clearly sacrificing so much to be there. I want to make sure they have enough Canada Goose coats. I want to make sure they have enough $8 lattes. You know, I want to make sure that these people are being taken care of. I'm very, very worried. Look, this really reveals, again, almost like a deep narcissism and just a misguided spirit in our young people. I think they have been, they want so badly to be the rebels with the cause. And they want, there's that thing in them that wants that so badly. And it's just so misguided. And it's almost in a narcissistic sort of, it goes so much deeper. It's hard to articulate, but there's no moral equivalency to, you know, the civil rights movement and what these protesters think they're fighting for. It's just in their head. They are so clearly convinced it's one and the same, and therein lies the problem. But also, when you stop teaching people history, when you start teaching them whatever misguided version the left teaches of history, and that whatever is being taught at Columbia University, that's how you get this. That's how you get a young American thinking that. That they're a freedom fighter right now, and that, you know, they're of the same ilk of people like Martin Luther King and Rosa Parks, again, out here, you know, out here on the streets of Columbia in their Canada Goose jackets, you know, taking the side of, like you said, murderers paragliding into to murder innocent civilians. So very fascinating to see this. And again, I hope if nothing else, sunlight is the best disinfectant. I guess that's, you know, coming from Caroline Sunshine.
Sunshine, right? Yeah.
Hopefully, yeah. I eyes wide open here. You know.
I'm glad you made the dad joke on that one, and not me. And I think you touch upon something. It's almost like they want conflict. It's almost like these people, when I see them, they want to be not happy. And I mentioned Dartmouth before. I want to quickly get into that, and then I'll let you go. Immediately after the events of October 7th, the new president convened panels. You mentioned you love open discussion, going through issues in a robust setting. That's what Dartmouth did. And it wasn't easy. It wasn't smooth, but they got people to have a dialogue, Muslims and Jews and everybody else alike. And you know what? Aside from a few individuals that protested in an area that they couldn't, on the Dartmouth College campus, everything has been peaceful. And you know what the college did? The moment those people did that, they got rid of them. They used the full force and power of the university and the college's laws to get rid of them. They quashed it immediately. And what you've seen on the Dartmouth College campus is peace. This doesn't mean it's perfect. Obviously, this is a very, very difficult issue. And both sides of this issue are extremely passionate. But use those passions to inform your arguments. Don't have it lead to the junk we're seeing at Columbia. And the final thought, immediately after I had lunch with two of my fraternity brothers, one a Muslim, one a Jew, we commented on what our alma mater did, and we were proud. And you know what we did? Instead of fighting and instead of being angry at one another, we regaled ourselves on the stupidity of our time as fraternity brothers, and that's what we should all be doing, coming together. We should all be one. We should celebrate not our differences, to your point, Caroline Sunshine, but our similarities, and try to live on this earth as one. That's a message of sunshine, I tried to say. Caroline Sunshine, thank you so much. A pleasure having you, as always. Enjoy your weekend. More Fox Across America after this.
It's the number one show with humans and animals.
Nice beaver.
Thank you. I just had it stuffed.
Fox Across America with Jimmy Failla.
So you may have heard the commercial there, the Fox News quizzes. Maybe we should just take it live on air, shall we? I'm going to click start the quiz, and we're going to do the quiz together. I believe I'm on the right quiz. The heart is protected by, I don't know, the rib cage? Correct. Is this good radio, guys? Please let me know. Call in. Is this good radio? next question. Spina bifida, this isn't a fun topic, causes problems with the structure that develops into, I believe, the spinal cord? Correct. Okay. What is the name given to the body system? Are these all medical? Am I on the right quiz?
You've got the right quiz.
What is the name given to the body system whose primary function is to protect the body from infectious diseases? The immune system. This is easy. Red blood cells are a component of the circulatory system, correct? A low red blood cell count or reduced amount of hemoglobin is called anemia, correct? Which organ acts as a pump? Can you guys hear the landscapers outside my house? We're going to heart. B, correct. How much time do we have?
You got 30 seconds. Come 30 on, seconds. Finish strong.
What term is given to the event surrounding decreased ovarian function? Boy, nothing says good radio like talking about this. Menopause. D, and on menopause, I think I'm going to end. We don't need to go further. More Fox Across America.
You did a great job. That was amazing.
Don't forget to go there.
Quiz.fox, not something.
Take it every day.
More Fox Across America after this. You are listening to Fox Across America. I am Todd Pyro in for Jimmy Failla. Jimmy's doing some comedy this weekend. I hopefully am going to sleep because I was up early. 4 a.m. start time for Fox and Friends first today covering the Israeli strike on Iran. And somebody used to join us every single week when we had that 4 a.m. show because he used to hop on the show before heading to the airport there in Kentucky to head over to D.C. is one congressman, James Comer. Congressman, sorry we don't have the 4 a.m. anymore. We miss you on Fox and Friends First.
I miss Fox and Friends First, too. I tell you, you've been good to me. And it always impressed me how when I would get off that interview about 4:15, how many people would text me and say, hey, you look good this morning. I mean, there were people up watching, a lot of people at 4:15.
I don't understand why, but we were thankful for them, and we hope they watch this morning. And, you know, yeah. Before we go any further, I've got a lot of questions to ask you on a lot of your signature issues, but I do want to get your thoughts on the Israeli strike on Iran. Your reaction, thoughts going forward?
Well, certainly I believe Israel has the right to defend itself, and that looks to me like what they're doing. But, you know, we all know history – and we all know that, you know, anything dealing with a war with Israel is something that could escalate very quickly into a world war. So I'm concerned about it, but I certainly support Israel, and I support Israel's right to defend itself.
Understood. Now to the issues that you are associated with, that some would say you are famous for. One of the problems, let's say, for Republicans with Donald Trump in court every day and the media, conservative media, liberal media, all media covering is that certain topics like the Hunter saga goes by the wayside. So if you could right now fill us in the latest on your investigation into Hunter, into Joe, and where we are and what comes next.
Well, we've already deposed all the key figures in the Biden schemes. I think we've clearly proven that the Bidens were influence peddling. Now, the investigation's about Joe Biden and what role he played. We've had three former Biden associates, Bobulinski, Galanis, and Archer, all testify that Joe Biden was the central figure in the influence peddling team. So we know Joe Biden's lied. We've given Joe Biden and Hunter Biden an opportunity to come back and testify in public because that's what at least Hunter said he wanted to testify in public. He refused once we gave him the opportunity. But the main thing was the deposition, and you will see that deposition will prove very helpful as we, you know, shift to holding them accountable for wrongdoing. But with Joe Biden, we found, you know, so many lies, so many discrepancies about what he's told the American people about his knowledge of, involvement with, and participation in his family's business scheme. So we gave him an opportunity to testify. We even gave him an opportunity to answer questions in a letter, and he refused both times. So where we are now, we've subpoenaed more documents. I think it's pretty well known. We've subpoenaed phone records and some more bank statements and some documents that that we learned through the investigation existed pertaining to some of the shady deals in some of the countries. I'm in the oversight committee room right now. We are poring over documents. The staff is. And once we've gone through all these documents, I would predict that we'll be wrapping this investigation up very soon. And, you know, it's not going to turn out very well for the Bidens because we found many crimes that the Bidens have committed. I think if you look at what the bank said in the 170 plus suspicious activity reports, there were numerous financial crimes. What we've heard from the IRS whistleblowers, there were many tax crimes. And what we've heard from all the associates that we could get to come in here that were involved in the schemes, there are a lot of Foreign Agents Registration Act type violations that I think that everyone with any sense of objectivity will realize are crimes that were committed by the Biden family. And I want to hold them accountable from that point on. And that's where the hard part begins.
Sure. And that is the hard part. I'm going to ask you, what does accountability look like? Is it legal accountability? Is it congressional accountability? Is it accountability through the system of justice? Is it political in the sense that this information will come out in a way that it did not because it was stifled in 2020 and will cost Joe Biden the election? What specifically will that accountability be?
Well, the first accountability is transparency. The American people would have never known that the Bidens received all this money predominantly while Joe Biden was vice president. The American people would have never known that the Bidens didn't have a legitimate business, that their business was influence peddling. The American public wouldn't have known the Bidens never paid any taxes on the tens of millions of dollars they took from our adversaries around the world without the investigation. And the American people wouldn't have known Joe Biden lied when he said he never met with any of these people that sent his family money. And in fact, he met with all of them. We've proven that. So the American people know the truth, and I think that'll be a valuable tool of accountability for people in November when they vote, but also legal accountability. And there are crimes that have been committed. And what we found in this investigation is that the Department of Justice in three different jurisdictions were investigating the Bidens. You have the IRS was investigating the Bidens. We have the Securities and Exchange Commission was investigating the Bidens. The FBI was investigating the Bidens. And every instance, they were told to stand down by some different deep state actor. So there were crimes committed. There was a government cover-up. And I think in the end, the ultimate accountability will be Department of Justice accountability from criminal referrals. Now, I strongly support impeachment. I believe that Joe Biden's committed impeachable offenses. Impeachment's still on the table. But what we all witnessed this week, the Senate's not going to do anything with impeachment. I mean, if they won't even have a trial with Mayorkas after what he's done on the southern border, then, you know, this Democrat-controlled Senate's not serious about anything if it pertains to holding a Democrat accountable. But what we will be able to do is have criminal referrals. If the Merrick Garland Department of Justice won't do anything with them, then hopefully we'll have a new president in place next year and their attorney general will.
Yeah, to that point, we got about 2 minutes remaining. If Republicans win the presidency, win the Senate, win the House, what is in Joe Biden's future?
Well, it's not a bright future. I mean, they have not only lied to the American people, they violated many laws, financial laws, ethics laws, campaign finance laws. And I think that they're going to be held accountable. And it's not going to be, any type of sham hearings like what we're seeing with this Trump stuff. This is legitimate legal problems that they have through the course of our investigation, which relied on IRS notes, which relied on Department of Justice testimony, which relied on, from depositions, from emails, from text messages, and from bank statements. That's their biggest problem. The first thing we did in the investigation was subpoenaed their bank statements, their bank records. Bank records don't lie. And the bank records show that this family's taken in tens of millions of dollars from sources they never should have taken money from, and they never paid a penny of taxes on any of this money. You've got tax fraud. You've got tax evasion. I mean, they have a lot of problems, and I think the American people want to see our officials who violate the public trust held accountable. And that's what I'm trying to do, Todd. It's very difficult. This environment is very difficult with the media. We've got some squishy Republicans over here. There's not a Democrat in this city that wants to do anything about public corruption, but hopefully we'll be able to be successful at the end of the day.
And then you got your friends Raskin there and Goldman, who love to, you know, take the law in places where, as a lawyer, I don't know how they can, at least in the case of Raskin, call himself constitutional expert when he seems to not understand fundamental points of the Constitution. And Dan Goldman, well, he's just Dan Goldman. Congressman, have to leave it there. Like I told your colleague, Dan Muser, I would like to wish you a happy weekend, but I know it's not going to be for you because, nope, based upon the email that I received, 9 a.m. tomorrow, you'll be back at work at the House office building.
I'm going to be voting no a lot. Yeah, right.
Understood. Well, have a good time voting no. Hopefully you'll get a nice meal at the very least on Saturday out of it, having to be away from your family. Enjoy, right, and we'll talk to you soon, my friend.
Thank you.
More Fox Across America after this.
The show that solves problems the old-fashioned way.
You and me are going to fight when that bell rings at 3 o'clock.
This is Fox Across America with Jimmy Failla.
You are listening to Fox Across America. I am your fill-in host, Todd Pyro, from Fox and Friends. First, 5 a.m. Eastern. Every weekday morning. Today, however, 4 a.m. Eastern, because of the Israeli strike on Iran. And I'm joined by a gentleman I've never spoken with, so this will be an interesting, good experience for both of us, I hope, at least for the congressman. Congressman Dave Rouser from the 7th Congressional District in North Carolina. Good to meet you, sir.
Well, good to meet you.
You have a very interesting response to a problem that we have seen so much over the course of the last, let's call it, 7 months following the events of October 7th. We have seen protest after protest that goes beyond your First Amendment right in our country to protest. These protests have not only become violent in many instances, which is not protected, but they have caused our once great American cities to come to a halt. We have had a situation where, at least in San Francisco, New York, other cities throughout the country, ambulances couldn't get through. People could not get to life-saving treatments. The list goes on and on, the damage that these protesters caused. And again, we have a time, manner, and place restriction on the First Amendment. You have put forward the Safe and Open Streets Act to deal with it. Go into a little detail as to what it is specifically and how it works, Congressman.
Sure. Well, first, everybody obviously has the right to protest and freedom of speech, but you don't have the right to block public roads and bridges. That obviously has severe consequences and sometimes very costly consequences in the case of ambulances trying to transport patients, or emergency personnel trying to get towards or get to a disaster, fire, police call, whatever it may be. And so simply put, the Safe and Open Streets Act essentially makes it a federal crime to block these roads and bridges, again, public roads and bridges, which 99.9% around the country are. So anyhow, you can't allow this to stand. And I, quite frankly, was surprised that we did not have a statute on the books to address this. And so we're filling that gap. On the Senate side, Senator Tillis and my former House colleague, Marsha Blackburn, are sponsors of the Senate version of this bill. And I hope that we can get some good movement on it.
This makes too much sense. And whenever I think about something that makes too much sense, I immediately go to the individuals who, you know, cannot have a bill make too much sense because it just, I don't know, hurts their sensibilities. I'm looking at the AOCs of the world, the Ilhan Omars of the world, the Rashida Tlaibs of the world, all of whom basically came out with rage in their hearts for the way that the Columbia protesters and basically all protesters are treated, no matter what damage they may cause. So, look, you're not going to get those folks, I don't think. But is there enough bipartisan support from, I'm going to say a very controversial statement here, reasonable-minded Democrats to put this over the finish line?
Well, time will tell, but certainly there's sound argument for this bill. It makes good common sense to 99.9% of all Americans out there. And when you have a bill that is of this nature, that makes good sense, I think we've got a reasonable chance of getting it done. Now, you know, each chamber has its legislative hurdles. And certainly we've had our challenges in the House on a number of different matters. But this is one that, quite frankly, should sail through with bipartisan support. We'll see what happens. But part of the legislative process is alerting Americans from all over the country what's on the table and building support for it. And, of course, we're working every day to build a good, strong list of co-sponsors for this legislation.
Have you thought about renaming it the Don't Let Grandma Die in an Ambulance Stuck in Traffic Because Some Idiot Doesn't Understand How the First Amendment Works Act? Have you thought about that, maybe changing the title?
Well, we may use that as a second version. I feel pretty bullish on our opportunity with this version of the bill, and but we're going to push it. We're going to push it hard. It's something that's desperately needed. And in fact, you know, crime and all the things that are happening in our country now, you get more of whatever you incentivize. And until and when you crack down on these behaviors, you're going to continue to get more of it. That's just the bottom line. So. I believe this bill would help address that issue in a major way, particularly as it relates, obviously, to the closure of our roads and bridges due to protesters. And by the way, it's not just, you know, one sector of protester. This would apply to any protest on any issue. It's not a Hamas versus Israeli thing. This would apply to any protest, no matter who's protesting.
Yeah, my only concern, and I agree, it should have complete bipartisan support. But my only concern is your ACLUs, organizations like that, you know, who just love to throw a wrench to gum up the works, are going to take this to the court. My personal take as a lawyer is that this falls right in line with time, place, and manner restrictions, but time will tell. I wish you the best of luck.
Well,
yes, sir.
Well, not only that, interstate commerce.
Correct.
There's a key component of interstate commerce here, too.
I have about a minute remaining. Each of the 55-minute time block of each show so far, we've talked about the NFL draft. You're in North Carolina. Got to ask you about Drake May. Is he good? Is he bad? Where should he fall, Congressman?
Well, gosh, I haven't been thinking about that. You know, I'm an NC State fan.
There we go.
UNC Tar Heels. So when it comes to Drake May, I'll tell you, though, he was a great talent in college. Of course, NFL is a different deal, but I'm gonna stick with supporting all North Carolinians. So not to give you too much of a political answer,
wow.
But I wish him the best. I think in the right on the right team in the right mix, I think he can do well. And I say that as a Wolfpack fan that never pulled for him in college.
Understood. That was a great answer politically to an NFL draft question. Unfortunately for my Giants, Philip Rivers is not available this year after we once drafted your NC Stater there back in 2004 and then summarily traded him to the San Diego Chargers, where he had a great career. Eli won a couple Super Bowls, a trade that I think worked out for everybody. The Safe and Open Streets Act will work out for everybody. I hope you get it through. Congressman Rouser, we appreciate your time. Again, I keep saying this. I feel like I'm being mean. I feel like I'm taunting you. I know you're not going to have a great weekend because you need to be in Congress at 9 a.m. tomorrow for this vote. But I hope after that your weekend turns out well. Thank you for your time.
Well, thank you. Thank you much. Great to be with you, Todd.
Likewise, sir. More Fox Across America after this.
Live from Everywhere USA, it's Fox Across America with Jimmy Failla.
I am Todd Pyro, filling in for Jimmy Failla. Fox Across America is the show. I'm fortunate to join you all every weekday morning from 5 to 6 a.m. on Fox and Friends First alongside my co-anchor, Carly Shipkus. We do have some breaking news to get to, and it's one of those instances where I'm happy I'm on radio right now and not on TV, because right outside the courthouse during the Donald Trump trial, downtown Manhattan, a man appears to have set himself on fire. This just happening moments ago. Obviously, all news sources trying to work their angles at this point, find out exactly what happened, who this individual was, and why they did this. I don't necessarily have any information to bring you on that front, but I do want to bring in my friend, Jackie DeAngelis, co-host of the Big Money Show on Fox Business. Not going to spend too much time on this, Jackie, but just your general thoughts as to why someone lights themselves on fire, presumably, and again, I have to speculate here, at the Donald Trump trial. I question things in humanity all the time. And gosh, Jackie, this is one of them.
Hi, Todd. It's great to be with you. And that why is the central question. So until we know more about that definitively, I think it's hard to say. But my first guess when I hear something like this is you set yourself on fire. It's in some sort of form of protest. We're seeing a lot of difficult protest to swallow across the country with respect to the geopolitical unrest in the Middle East. And you're seeing a lot of anti-Israel commentary. So I'm wondering, part of me, if there's not some, you know, strike against Donald Trump in some way, what's happening in New York. I'm not necessarily sure. But having said that, as somebody who would not light themselves on fire, really, for any cause, sure. Even one that I believe in, I would just say it's so interesting to me that, you know, you're looking at one side of the coin, people who stand for MAGA, Make America Great Again, and people are saying they're anti-democratic and democracy is at stake if you vote for Donald Trump. But when we see any kind of protest, including this one, that either gets violent or ugly, or there's name calling involved, or there are threats involved, you know, and you hear Katie Couric talking about the anti-intellectualism of the MAGA movement, I've got to ask myself, what the heck is going on the left?
And that is the question. And it's a question I think we ask ourselves every day of the week. I always make the point, Jackie. I live in Connecticut, a state with many Democrats, run by Democrats, but I don't know these far left people. And again, I want to be very clear. We have no understanding of the background of the gentleman who set himself on fire. So I'm not going there. I'm just following up on your comments on Katie Couric comments and just in general, how far left certain people have become. And there's definitely a divorcing from reality and the reality of so many Americans on a day in and day out basis. It just doesn't make sense to me. And again, somebody lighting themselves on fire, we don't know the exact reasoning behind it, but this is just one of those things that goes in the bucket of what is going on. Yeah. And I think you asked that question on your show. By the way, thank you for literally walking off the set of your show to do a radio hit here. But do you find yourself just asking, what the heck is going on?
All the time.
Yeah, more and more.
All the time, Todd. And I live here in New York City. I know you work here. It's different than living here. So I'm glad that you're not having that experience in Connecticut, even though it is a blue state. But I see acts of progressivism across this city every single day and have to scratch my head and ask what's going on. The funny part of it is if you look at it from a business standpoint, so many people have left. So many people who would vote to get the Alvin Braggs removed from their post or possibly vote for a Rudy Giuliani type of America's mayor. Right, to come back and clean up the city after what we've seen with de Blasio and Adams. All those people are gone. And so these progressive people are left and they don't realize that when they act out this way, they only make the situation worse for themselves because more of the higher paying taxpayers leave and the city is going to end up really cash strapped, if not already. That's already starting to happen with budget cuts and whatnot. And basically, all you end up doing is, you know, stripping away from your city and making it a place that nobody wants to be. Tourists don't want to come visit. Businesses don't want to do business in. And we've seen that in San Francisco. Unfortunately, pieces of that are happening here. I hope it doesn't go too far.
I mean, I think that's such a great point. Look, the individuals that you're just talking about, they are going to vote Democrat no matter what, unless they decide not to vote at all in protest of Joe Biden's stance on Israel, which I find flabbergasting because he is completely, you know, backed away from what he should be doing with regard to Israel to appease these people, these hardcore Palestinian protesters, and yet they may not vote for him anyway. But this election will come down to those swing state undecided voters who are going to look at where they are on November 5th or earlier if they vote earlier. Mm-hmm. And when people do that check-in as to where am I better off than I was 4 years ago, they look in their wallets.
Yeah.
So state of play right now, April 19th, where is our economy headed between now and November 5th on things like interest rates, which we all expected to go down, gas prices, which we all expected to go down, and a stock market, which in the beginning of the year looked like it couldn't be stopped.
Well, I hate to be the financial grim reaper here, Todd, but unfortunately, and to the Biden administration's dismay, I think you're going to see everything go up. Prices are going to continue to go up. The CPI has been indicating for the last few months that we're going in the wrong direction with respect to inflation. I think that will have an impact on interest rates, that we either stay here or possibly now you've got UBS saying that we may even get a hike this year. Wow. So that will fly in the face of what everyone thought. The 30-year fixed rate mortgage is back over 7% at 7.1%, taking a lot of people's dreams of home ownership off the table with a rate that high. So ultimately, you sort of started the question by asking, how did you feel? How do you feel now when you're voting versus how did you feel then? And the administration can't gaslight any longer. People are using their credit cards more than they were. They see the sort of sticky inflation that hasn't left the economy at all. And they also see that this is a government that continues to spend. The impacts of bills like the Inflation Reduction Act, which doesn't reduce inflation, haven't actually been felt. It will increase inflation. Then you've got him making this push to say, I want to continue to go against what the Supreme Court said, not go through Congress and forgive student loans. What are people going to do with that extra income? They're going to go out and spend it. That's going to stimulate the economy. So I don't see a scenario where from now until November, things are getting better for Biden. The stock market may go up and it may continue to because of things like AI and technology and different things people are investing in. But that is not a direct correlation of the fundamentals of the economy.
Let's start with the stock market. I am of this view. And again, this is not my area. So feel free to say, Pyro, you're a moron. More so than you usually do when we have our personal conversations.
I never say that.
Oh, stop it. But I, based upon what I've read, think that there is a possibility and could have been the reason for the run-up in the stock market to begin with, that the powers that be within the Democratic Party have very, very tight connections to Wall Street.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to say I understand algorithmic buying, high-volume computer buying, but I think that there is a possibility that they could tip the scales and make the stock market look better than it actually is. Is that a real fear? Could it explain what we saw in the first couple months of the year? And could it potentially explain if we do see a huge run-up between now and November, stock market Dow 60,000 or
right.
something, to sort of push Joe Biden over the top?
It's possible. I'll be really honest with you and say I never really thought of that angle before. It's certainly possible because of that disconnect that I'm explaining to you. Presidents love to do it. Donald Trump has done it. Joe Biden is doing it now. They look to the stock market and say, but see, everything's great. And it's not necessarily a reflection of the fundamentals. More what I think is happening is it's these budding technologies and also possibly, you know, related to the election in that some investors do think there's going to be a change of guard at the White House. And so we're in an election year and you see the run up with enthusiasm as a result of that, with Donald Trump coming into power again and, you know, basically reversing many of the things that Biden did to make it tough for people, you know, continuing to cut taxes for corporations in the middle class so that they can get by versus, you know, choking them even tighter with tax and inflation and all the elements that we're dealing with. So I think if there's enthusiasm that's tied to the election, it's probably has more to do with that.
Understood. I got real wonky there with that question. We're going to break it down to some simple stuff for the people driving right now and listening to this show. Gas prices. We saw a little run up in prices following overnight following the Israeli attack on Iran, retaliatory attack, I should say. What are you expecting in the summer driving season? Because I think that's really when people start thinking about, hey, you know, I'm doing more than just driving to and from work and to and from school. I'm hitting the road, and I don't want to change my plans because Joe Biden doesn't know how to manage the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, the oil that's in our ground, and overall just, you know, the general geopolitical oil market.
All right, so there's a couple of pieces here, and you know this is my thing. I reported and lived in the Middle East. I covered oil for another network that shall not be named. But basically what I think is happening is you're seeing certain seasonal trends that we see every year. Gas prices do go up, and they peak around the 4th of July, and then they'll slowly come down again as we approach a November date for an election. But it's a little different because of the energy policy in this country. So, you know, it's all on a relative basis. If we were starting at $2 a gallon as we were going in, it would feel less of a sting to the average motorist than it does when we're starting. I think we're well over three right now. Pardon me, I don't drive, so I don't check the prices every single day, but we're well over $3 a gallon and we're inching towards four. So you've got an energy policy that isn't really creating enough supply on the market that's gotten into this new realm, this higher realm when we got to $5 a gallon, for example. And also, you've got geopolitical instability that ultimately I do blame on Joe Biden, because there was no deterrence with respect to Iran or Hamas or any of these situations, or even Russia invading Ukraine, that has put us in a precarious spot when it comes to oil and oil production. And then you look at the fact that we're not doing as much as we could here in the United States to offset that because of the green agenda that's been pushed over the last 3 years. And we're in a tough spot. What's amazing to me is Jennifer Granholm goes on The View the other day and she tells them, don't worry about gas prices. Yes, the president is watching it. He's going to tap the SPR again if he has to, she said in so many words. Well, we've already taken the SPR down, I believe it was before the midterm elections, roughly 50%, so that he could get that sort of the gas anxiety off of people's minds. I don't know. What do you want to take it down to? Zero at this point to try to price fix gas? It's really incredible.
He's obsessed with it, according to Jennifer Granholm. Methinks that what he's obsessed with is his poll numbers and winning the election. And he's going to utilize every tool at his disposal with regard to things that he shouldn't be touching, quite frankly, to tip the balance when it comes to gas prices. When we all know, Jackie, to your point, we have it beneath us.
Yeah.
It's literally lying beneath our feet.
Well,
all he had to do, well, not my feet.
No, but
feet.
How about this thing in Alaska?
Yeah.
The Willow Project, 13 million acres, I believe, that all of a sudden they're now saying you can't touch that for drilling, when half of it had been, you know, sort of blessed to be drilled upon. You know, listen, these oil wells in Texas and the Bakken, we've used fracking and technology to get deeper and deeper and get more and more out of them. They're not going to last forever. I'm not saying they're going to drain tomorrow. It's not something we have to worry about. But it doesn't mean that if you don't have more resources in this country, you shouldn't be exploring and drilling to find those resources. Now, all of a sudden, because of Earth Day, and again, sort of pandering to this, the progressive greenies, he's saying, nope, Alaska's off limits again. Every single Republican and Democrat politician in Alaska right now is saying, this would be huge for our economy. Why are you not letting us unlock the resources, the jobs that it creates in the surrounding towns, and, you know, all of those spillover effects? Why?
But yet we allow Iran and Russia to become huge players on the oil export stage, which helps them and prevents us from doing the things to them that we need to do.
That's exactly right.
From a geopolitical perspective.
Yeah, and we'll take oil from Venezuela. Right. By the way, they're sending all their criminals over here over the open border into this country. That's dirty oil. Why would you want that? Why would you want to support all of these different corrupt regimes?
I never knew Jackie DeAngelis loved oil so much.
Yeah, I mean, listen, you and I learn about each other every day, Todd.
It's a beautiful growth that we're having together. My favorite part, this is a sign up before we have to let Jackie go to get to her weekend. You know, Jackie sits in that morning meeting for her show, The Big Money Show, airing 1 to 2 p.m. on Fox Business.
Thanks
every
for the
weekend.
Plug.
That's what I do. And we make eye contact. And some days you know, Jackie smiles. And some days she gives me a, I'm not going to call it the stink eye because that's mean. But someday you give me a look and I wonder if I've done something
wrong. I'm not a morning
wrong.
Person. It's not so, personal.
It's fun. It's a game that we play and it's something I look forward to every day. Let's not stop it, Jackie DeAngelis. It brings joy to my simple, sad world.
Well, whatever I can do for you. You clearly are a morning person. You and Carly hit it out of the park every morning. I don't know how two people could humanly be so happy at that hour.
To your point, I sound like I've smoked a pack of Chesterfields by this point, considering I've only got a half an hour of radio left to go, but I've been doing on-air stuff since 4 a.m. this morning. So
amazing.
Thank
Good for
you for
Todd.
Taking some of the words so that I did not have to say them. Jackie DeAngelis, my friend. And my colleague, thank you so much. This was awesome. We
God bless
a lot.
You and have a wonderful weekend.
You as well. More Fox Across America after this.
Watch Jimmy's new show Saturday nights at 10 p.m. Eastern on Fox News Channel.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
Listening to Fox Across America, Todd Pyro in for Jimmy Failla. And in case you missed it, Joe Biden implying that his uncle was eaten by another human. Roll tape.
My uncle, they called him Ambrose Bosie, they called him Bosie. My uncle Bosie was a hell of an athlete, they tell me when he was a kid. And he became an Army Air Corps before the Air Force came along. He flew those single-engine planes as reconnaissance over war zones. And he got shot down in New Guinea, and they never found the body because there used to be a lot of cannibals for real in that part of New Guinea.
For real. We all tell stories from time to time. But at what point does a lie, and it is a lie because the U.S. military confirmed that Joe Biden was telling a lie there, how does cannibalism make it into your story, boys? Not once has cannibalism made it into any of the fantastical tales that Todd Pyro has told.
I mean, we've heard the Amtrak story multiple times, and after a certain point, you think someone would get him to stop doing that. This just comes out of left field. You don't expect a cannibal comment.
No, you don't.
Yeah, I agree. Also, the one about the fire, Josh, with his family was dirt. Remember the one about the
House fire that was put out in 10 minutes, but you know, raging blaze. Yes.
Right. No, he just exaggerates a lot. I think one of the best parts of that yesterday, we had Senator Mullen on and like Jimmy told him he hadn't heard it yet. And like, he really thought Jimmy was making it up at first. It was unbelievable.
Not a joke.
Yeah.
Not a line from The Onion. We say that line too much. There's no words. We also don't know if they were fine young cannibals, but regardless, this story is driving me crazy. More Fox Across America after this. You are listening to Fox Across America. I am Todd Pyro from Fox and Friends First, airing each weekday morning, 5 to 6 a.m. In for our friend Jimmy. It's Friday, so Jimmy is on the road doing his comedy thing, bringing humor to the people, bringing joy to America. And there's no joy in the story that I have to report now. You may have been following us. You may have been following along on TV. But if not, the first time you're hearing this, a horrific scene outside the Donald Trump trial downtown Manhattan, a man apparently setting himself on fire. We don't know the man's condition at this time, but in about 10 minutes, according to the latest release from the chief of department, NYFD, there's going to be a briefing to the media to find out exactly what happened. Maybe we'll find out who this individual is. Probably not at this point. It might be a little too early for that, but hopefully we'll find out the condition of this individual, try to get some answers. Right now we are joined by Caroline Leavitt, Trump 2024 National Press Secretary. Hey, Caroline, before we get into the campaign, any comment on this horrific story that we've been following for about the last hour, downtown Manhattan, a gentleman setting himself on fire outside the Trump trial?
Yeah. Hey, Todd. This is obviously horrific news. I was just made aware of it before dialing into the show. I know that our team is on the ground with the president. They are still in the courthouse, nice and safe. I'm sure that's good news for your audience that's listening today. I also understand the New York Police Department is going to do a press conference any minute now, so we'll wait to see if we can find out more about who this individual was, whether they were a protester or supporter. We frankly are not sure. Obviously, you know, we keep that person in our thoughts and prayers and hope that they are still alive and are still with us. But I think, Todd, this honestly just speaks to the real circus that this unfortunate court case has become. I was there earlier in the week inside the courtroom with the president, and it's just such a shame to see that the city of New York is having to waste taxpayer dollars on this show trial. And, you know, I've talked to some of the New York police officers who were protecting the courthouse outside, and one of them said to me, "I'm sorry you guys have to be here." And I looked at him and I said, "I'm sorry too. You guys should be out there protecting these your neighborhoods and removing violent criminals off of the streets, not standing here for this witch hunt that's being brought by Democrats." So it's a shame for the city of New York, and we'll see what the New York Police Department has to say about this new development today.
And obviously we'll be interested to hear what your candidate, Donald J. Trump, has to say about this when the time is right. But you really touched upon it, circus. I think that's the right word. And you wonder, what is going on in America? And I ask myself, what is going on in the city that I grew up 25 minutes outside of, that I work in every single day? It's become a city that I will absolutely not take my children to until it becomes less insane than it is right now. And Caroline, I don't know if that time comes anytime soon, and that's sad. Thoughts?
It is very sad, and I've been spending a lot of time in your city now that we have to be there for this witch hunt trial. And, you know, as a young woman, frankly, it's hard to feel safe just walking around outside. I love to exercise. I'd love to go out and go for walks when I can while working there, but it feels as though it's not a safe place to do that. And it's just unfortunate to see what has become of New York, and it's because of Democrats' soft-on-crime policies. Alvin Bragg's soft-on-crime defund the police policies have created this hellhole in New York, frankly. And with people that live in the city, especially long-term residents, they see that and understand it. And we heard from them on Tuesday when the president stopped by the bodega in Harlem. There were many residents of Harlem who were outside the bodega, very excited and enthusiastic to see President Trump. And many of them were chanting, "Lying Bragg." And that's because they know that Alvin Bragg is wasting their tax dollars and time going after the former president of the United States. He should be locking up criminals who are robbing bodegas and stabbing women and raping women and murdering their fellow American citizens in their city of New York.
Gosh, when I graduated college, I couldn't wait to get out of your state, move to a big city. Now I'm rethinking that.
You'll have to come on back.
My roommates, yeah, he didn't actually stay on the linear path, but he ended up back in the Granite State, New Hampshire. And now he's a urologist up there and, living the life as much as a urologist can. Meantime, I have to deal with basically the same things that he sees on a day-in and day-out basis, just not within a medical confine. That was a horrible joke. I'm glad you didn't laugh too much. Let's get back to the campaign. New polls out show, as expected, as I think comes as no shock, tied in Pennsylvania and in Michigan, I believe. Was it Michigan? No. Tied in Pennsylvania, Wisconsin. And pretty nice spread for your candidate there in Georgia and in Michigan. Let's focus on Wisconsin. I don't understand Wisconsin. Maybe you can help me understand Wisconsin, because every single person I know from Wisconsin is pretty hardcore into the president. But I guess that is balanced out by the city, Milwaukee, and the college town, Madison. How do you win Wisconsin, Caroline?
Yeah, well, that's a very good point. And it's like most states, right? With Pennsylvania, you have Philly and you have Pittsburgh, and the rest of the state is strongly in support of President Trump. It is the same landscape in Wisconsin. You see the cities are liberal stomping grounds. But outside of that, in suburban and rural Wisconsin, President Trump is beating Joe Biden by a significant margin. And so we'll continue to get our grassroots operation out on the ground to get voters out to the polls and also to register first-time voters who are fed up with Joe Biden's policies. We have a great ground team in Wisconsin and in every battleground state across this country. They are expanding daily, and they are focused on two things. One of them is getting out the vote, and then the second is protecting the vote. And we actually announced today between the RNC and our campaign, we're launching an aggressive new election integrity effort. We're going to have more than 100,000 paid staff and volunteers in every single battleground state and county ahead of Election Day and on Election Day. And we're going to use the resources and our great lawyers at the RNC to go on offense in the courts ahead of the election if we feel as though states like Wisconsin or Pennsylvania are not abiding by their early voting laws, their mail-in ballot laws, and we see funny stuff going on ahead of the election. We're going to get ahead of that, unlike we unfortunately did not do in 2020. So that's what we're focused on in terms of getting out the vote. And the message to the people of Wisconsin is the same message in every battleground state, in every state in this country. You are not better off 4 years ago or today than you were 4 years ago in President Trump's America. We had a secure border. Now we have a wide open border. We had a booming economy pre-pandemic. Now we have a record high inflation crisis that's only continuing. Prices in Wisconsin are 21% higher than they were when Joe Biden took office. We can't afford four more years of Joe Biden. Every metric proves that. People feel it. And so we're going to continue to drive that message home in Wisconsin and every state all the way till November the 5th.
Let's focus on mobilizing the vote. And I want to focus on a very specific subset of the vote, the 18 to 22-year-old student in college. Because if you look at the numbers right now, polls show Donald Trump is doing so much better with regard to the youth vote in 2024 than he did in 2020. But at this point, those numbers don't matter bupkis if you don't turn out the vote. So I heard what you just said, but what are you doing on those college campuses? What are you doing with regard to the student who may live in a state that, quite frankly, their vote is not going to matter? I'm looking at a California, let's say, but goes to school in a swing state, has every right to register to vote in that swing state. But typically, those individuals have always signed up and benefited the Democratic Party. What are you doing to get those people in Donald Trump's quarter voting Republican in these swing states come November?
Well, you make a great point, Todd, because unfortunately in a lot of states across this country, you don't have to be a full-time resident of the state in order to vote in that state's election. I know that is the case here in New Hampshire. College students that go to UNH or your alma mater, Dartmouth, are allowed to vote in New Hampshire even though they're not full-time tax-paying residents, which a lot of full-time tax-paying residents really don't appreciate, especially when you're a Republican and these students are coming here voting Democrat, swaying our elections, and then they're just leaving without paying the consequences of those that they help elect. With that said, if that's the rule in these particular states, we got to play by the rules, right? And to your point, we have to change the hearts and the minds of these young people, regardless of where they're voting. And we're very much focused on doing that, and you're seeing that our efforts are working in the polling, as you said. Joe Biden is losing young people. This is a huge demographic for him that he is bleeding support from, and we're picking it up. It's a double-edged sword for Biden and the Democrats because you do have the very far left young folks in this country, many of them currently protesting on Columbia University's campus. These people don't think Joe Biden has done enough in Gaza. Then you also have young Jewish Americans who are upset with President Biden over his handling in Israel, not doing enough to support Israel. So that's why you see Joe Biden making this last-minute attempt to appeal to these voters by giving more student loan forgiveness. But it's not enough. It's not going to cut it. And President Trump's message to young people is this: if you
want to actually be able to afford the American dream, if you actually want to graduate from college and, I don't know, maybe be able to purchase a home with bringing down mortgage rates again and bringing down the cost of living and rent in our inner cities, there's only one person to vote for on the ballot, and that is Donald Trump. If you want to live in an inner city in this country and feel like you can actually walk down the street and be safe, then you have to vote for Donald Trump. If you don't want to have the situation like we saw at the University of Georgia with Lake and Riley, who was killed at the hands of an illegal immigrant that was welcomed into this country by Joe Biden's open border, you have to vote for Donald Trump. And we're seeing that those messages, when we drive them home with real faces, whether it is the heinous example of what happened to Lake and Riley, or whether it's talking about Bidenomics and how it's ripped off young people and is costing them the American dream, we're seeing these voters swing back in our camp. And we're doing that through earned media and also, of course, digital and social media, because that's where we know these young people are consuming their news.
Finally, before we let you go, much has been made of Trump being kept off the campaign trail because of the trial in New York. But I look at a map and I say, you know, look, he's doing his stuff in bodegas, but he can make it over to Pennsylvania potentially for some rallies. So that was, I'm kind of saying it's a little bit jokey, but what is the plan? Where do you think he realistically can get to without killing himself before the end of the trial? Like, I mean, I would assume Arizona, you know, leaving on a it might be difficult, but, you know, what about Georgia? What about Pennsylvania? What is the campaign's thought with regard to this harebrained scheme that I have, Caroline?
Well, for sure, President Trump will continue to hit the campaign trail. No one works harder than he does. I can tell you, as someone who works for the man, we are constantly working around the clock because that's what he does and that's what he expects from us. So he'll be out there. We're going to North Carolina tomorrow to Wilmington for a rally. We're going to continue to do more events like the Bodega one that you saw on Tuesday in the city. But President Trump was in Pennsylvania last weekend. We'll continue to hit the trail as much as we possibly can. We have Wednesdays off of court. We'll take full advantage of that, and then post-court as well, making sure we're getting the president out there as much as we can, because we know when he does, he wins. He wins the day. He drives the entire news cycle. You saw it in Atlanta when we stopped by a Chick-fil-A. You saw it on Tuesday when we stopped by a bodega. Everything he touches turns to gold, so we're going to make sure we can continue to get him out there and bring his winning message to voters all across this country.
Yeah, Donald Trump buying a lot of milkshakes when Joe Biden tried to literally copy. It was sad to watch. There was
pathetic.
No enthusiasm. It was a sad state of affairs. We'll see what happens when it comes to the voters. Caroline Leavitt, Trump 2024 National Press Secretary from the great state of New Hampshire. Thank you so much. Enjoy your weekend. More Fox Across America after this.
Call in now. We're excited to hear from you.
Who the f*** is this?
This is Fox Across America with Jimmy Failla.
So it's Taylor Swift. I'm sorry, Todd Pyro in for Jimmy Failla. Fox Across America is the show. And I'm going to conclude my time with you on this Friday afternoon answering the question that I know you came to the table today wanting an answer to. What does one Dave Portnoy think of Taylor Swift's new album? Listen.
I just woke up. My timeline, DMs, everything. Dave, you got to listen to the secret album, Thank You, Amy, from Taylor Swift. She capitalizes in the title, K-I-M. Kim Kardashian, that rat, that snake. I've been at the forefront of this for years, saying the Swifties, we do not forgive. We do not forget. She writes a song, Taylor, Thank You, Amy. K-I-M capitalized that lyric. I can't wait to see your little kid singing this song, only knowing it about me and you, Kim. I'm not gonna put any defining clues, and she capitalized K-I-M. K-I-M. F- you, Kim. F- you. This is Taylor's masterpiece. Her masterpiece.
My read on this is less about the music and more about Portnoy's love of competition, of fighting. You know, Portnoy, obviously, Barstool sports guy, loves the battle, especially when it comes to sports. That's how he started his company that has become a behemoth. He bets on games, is notable about betting on games, loves the rough and tumble of life. And so when you have an artist calling out somebody in pop culture and really sticking it to him, even though not officially. I think that's what's at play here. He loves the battle. That's our Portnoy. What say you, gentlemen?
I mean, as you know, the winner of TKTS Bar Trivia Taylor Swift Night, you know, it's I mean, I can't wait to listen to this album and concur with him. I mean, you know, clearly I'm all about Taylor Swift here.
Can we confirm that all three of us are actually men? I feel like we're about to lose our man card. Michael?
Well, I mean, yeah, that's the first thing I'm going to do when I get home, right? Josh is listening to the new Taylor Swift album. But no, in all seriousness, though, no, Portnoy, it's just funny to hear his takes on some of this stuff. And also a guy that's done a lot, like, in terms of charity recently. So he's been very successful for himself. But, you know, just a side note here, we're talking about Taylor Swift at the Met game this week, and my dad and I noticed. So Jeff McNeil's new walk-up song is Welcome to New York. So I don't know. I guess he changed. And my dad had the same reaction.
Jeff. Yeah. I mean, look, I'm going to admit it live on national television. I kind of like Taylor Swift.
No,
I like
that's
her
okay.
Music.
Yeah.
I think it's a horrible walk-up song. Come on, Jeff. Maybe this is the reason you're not having such a great season so far, and the folks on the local radio here want you gone. but I will say, got a little too much of her in regard to the football. When I'm watching football, I want to watch football. But in terms of her music, look at what else is out there right now, boys. It's crap. Taylor Swift actually has some talent, and I enjoy listening to her. Final thoughts before the listening to me is over.
Josh?
You know, I'm so glad that we're near the end of the show so that I can get to this album. I can't wait. You know, watching the Eras Tour repeatedly over and over streaming just wasn't doing it for me. I needed new music.
We needed more, yeah.
We
exactly.
needed more.
More Taylor more. Swift. As if, you know, her during the entire NFL season wasn't enough. But I honestly think, Todd, there are better young artists out there. And if you want to talk about, you know, Dua Lipa or Olivia Rodrigo, I don't know. I think they're kind of better, but that's just me.
You just said Olivia Rodrigo following Taylor Swift. If whoever's listening is in charge of the man cards, it can let us know where we give up ours. Give us the address. I'll send mine in immediately. Thanks so much for listening. Fox Across America, Todd Pyro in for Jimmy Failla. Go out there and make it a spectacular weekend, everybody.
Hi, everybody. It's Brian Kilmeade. I want you to join me weekdays at 9 a.m. East as we break down the biggest stories of the day with some of the biggest newsmakers and, of course, what you think.
Listen live or get the podcast now at BrianKilmeadeShow.com.
Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.